From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 355, Building Box Starter, with guest Matt Rock, recorded Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you very much, Brandon. And this is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and thanks so much for tuning into us. I'm glad to be back in the studio after many, many weeks of travel. Although not necessarily Run As related travel, that was more .NET Rocks related travel. And I've got a bunch of shows on the way here. And this is a cool one. He's somebody I've never spoken to before. Matt Rock has been programming professionally for the past 15 years. And the majority of this time was spent in the online advertising space in Southern California, where he led the development of high traffic display advertising and domain parking systems, serving millions of page views of unwanted content every day. In 2010, Matt was ready for a change and moved to Washington State to work as a senior software engineer for Microsoft. And now Matt is trying to absolve himself of the countless pop-ups and tacky landing pages that he provided by contributing to the open source world and helping Microsoft provide great products in the Visual Studio Cloud services. Matt has started open source projects such as Request Reduce for web optimization and Boxstarter.org to make repaving a machine a painless experience. And Matt has also made significant contributions to Chocolaty and created the PowerShell mocking functionality for Pester, a PowerShell unit testing framework. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
That's a great story. Going from building arguably the meanest code in the industry to, well, somebody had to write it, right?
Right, right. Well, it was fun stuff. Whenever you're serving, millions of impressions a day, there's lots of interesting things to be done there.
And you get a sense of the, making stuff work at that velocity is not a trivial thing either.
No, it's not.
And I really wanted to dig into Boxstarter. Gary Park, who's a regular listener to the show, pinged me a while back and asked,
oh, yeah, I know Gary.
Yeah, if we could talk about Boxstarter. And so I, dug into this. I don't know how I didn't know about this product. This makes me so happy. I can't tell you how many machines I pave in a given year.
Yep.
It's just part of my life.
Yeah, it can be an arduous process, that's for sure.
Well, and what's interesting here is, are you really crossing the line here between what is an IT task and what is a dev task? Because I think of NuGet and Chocolaty as dev tools. And you're doing it to do a very IT-related thing.
Yes. I mean, basically, this whole thing hit me about a couple years ago when it was a combination of things. One of them involved me having to repay my machine. I just thought, come on, this has got to be a better experience.
Sure.
Tell me a developer that hasn't had to do this, and it zaps. Half a day, maybe a couple days of your productivity.
Well, it's not as bad as it used to be. I remember when it mattered what order you installed Studio versus Office in.
Oh, yeah.
That evilness seems to have subsided.
There's still a little bit of that. For example, if you're installing Visual Studio, it's usually best to install the .NET framework separately beforehand in order to suppress. There's still a little bit of that, but you're right. It's gotten a lot better.
But built into the Windows world, there are the ability to build scripts for complete install. I just don't see that a lot of people use them that aren't actually in the business of building machines every day.
Right. It's not a trivial task.
Right.
And what I find is the kicker is the reboot. At some point in time, if you're doing anything somewhat complex, usually if you're installing Windows features or SQL Server, you're going to bump up against this. And the older the operating system, the more that you're going to bump up against it. And what I found myself doing was, writing these hacky scripts of, okay, at this point in time of the script, I know that I'm going to need a reboot. So I'm going to do a reboot. And now how am I going to recover from that reboot and end up in the place where I expect to be? And that was one of the big motivations for me is certainly we can solve this problem.
Right. I mean, if you're not going to automate the whole thing, what you end up doing is, you know, doing a step, it goes to a reboot, you turn to another machine you work for a while, eventually you notice it's finished rebooting, then you try to remember where the hell you were.
Exactly, right. And I have this personal rule where my stack can only go three levels deep.
Right.
And, you know, once I'm working on more than three things at the same time, I got to make one of them faster.
Yeah, or you're gonna drop something without a doubt.
Exactly, right. Yeah, the memory leak chances go up.
Okay, so I go to boxstarter.org, I download this thing. What am I looking at?
Well, so depending on what you're doing, you might not even have to do that.
Oh, really?
Yes. So the easiest way to at some point we need to describe what Chocolaty is, because it's hard to talk about what BoxArt does without Chocolaty. But Chocolaty forms a lot of the engine behind BoxStarter.
Absolutely.
And when I got started with BoxStarter, the process was, well, first you got to download Chocolaty. And then you get BoxStarter. And the problem with that is, while actually, you know, downloading Chocolaty is very easy to do, the whole point of BoxStarter is that I want to be able to hop on a box and as quickly as possible kick off my installation script. And I can't remember, you know, the URL shortened Chocolaty installer and some of the other other stuff that's in that initial command that basically calls out to create a web request in PowerShell. And so what I did was I created a click once app for BoxStarter. So basically, you can do this in a command line, or you can do it in IE or any browser that has a click once extension to it. You can get one for Chrome or Firefox, but in IE it just works.
Right.
And so you would type in, let me go step back a little bit. So let's say you have a package, that's set up to install your box just the way you want it.
Mm-hmm.
These packages are all based on top of Chocolaty. And let's just say that package name is, Matchbox.
Right.
So what I would do is I would open up IE and I would type in http://boxstarter.org/whack/package/whack/matchbox. As soon as I hit enter, you know, not long after that, I get the typical, you know, click once little box that says this thing is installing. Then I get the kind of the EULA box that says, you know, do you agree to install this? And basically what happens is that click once will pull down all the BoxStarter PowerShell modules, that it needs to run.
Right.
And then it opens up an elevated, PowerShell command. So there'll be likely another prompt there where you says, you know, yes, go ahead and. You know.
It's all right to have an admin level PowerShell window running.
Exactly, and that's, you know, and then just one last step, and you can there's actually a way to get around this, but you know, since part of what BoxStarter is trying to solve is the reboot issue, and naturally, if you have to reboot, you need to log back on, and so BoxStarter will prompt you to enter a password, and it's going to use that password in subsequent reboots to automatically basically log the machine back on as, you know, however many times it needs
to. Right, so that's the magic trick, is that with each reboot, it's actually going to continue on its own.
Exactly. Now,
okay.
You can pass a token into that initial URL. Basically, it would be boxstarter.org/package/whack/nr, which stands for no reboot. You know, there's times when maybe you just, you know, maybe I want to just hop on a box and install just a few very basic tools that I know I always want.
Right.
And I know that's not going to require a reboot, and I don't want to risk, maybe the machine's already in a pending reboot state. If BoxStarter sees that, it'll reboot it. And I just want to make sure that doesn't happen. Or I would give somebody else the URL and I'd hate to reboot their machine without them knowing it. So,
right.
You can get around that.
But I love this idea that maybe there's four tools that you like to use together to work with a machine. Rather than you having to go get each one of them, the fact is you can build a BoxStarter package or just go install those four tools.
Exactly, right. Like, you know, for me personally, you know, I got my favorite text editor, my favorite console, you know, Fiddler, a couple other things. And maybe, you know, no matter what box I'm on, you know, I know I'm always going to want those tools.
Right.
And, you know, Chocolaty will do this all on its own, but I also don't know if Chocolaty is already on there. So if
right.
Chocolaty was already on there, I could just do a C inst, and then whatever that package is. But, just that URL is just very easy for me to remember. And you can do it at the command line too. You know, if you're at the command line, you just type in start And, you know, as long as IE is your default browser or your default browser, has a Click Once extension to it, just type in start and then the URL and, that'll basically just hit off your default browser with
right.
a URL.
Okay. This is the experience that I want, that I go in, I type a command into a browser and stuff just installs for me.
Exactly.
Now, how do I get there, Matt?
How do you get to...
To that install, that experience.
Right. So, I mean, part of it is just, you know, you get to your box and you open up IE and you type in the URL. Now, I think what you're getting at is before you get to that point, you have to have the package that you want to install,
right?
Is it right? So,
and maybe even before we go in there, you still need a base install of a machine, right? I mean, this sounds like I have to have an OS and I have to have it patched up and I have to have PowerShell ready to go.
You don't have to have it patched up.
Okay.
So BoxOutr does include the ability to, BoxOutr basically includes a couple modules. All the commands in those modules are accessible to your package, and it does include a command to install critical updates.
Yeah, update everything.
Exactly.
Okay.
And one thing that I don't want to go without mentioning this is what we're doing right now. We're describing probably the most typical use case scenario,
yes.
which is getting on the box and installing it. You can do this remotely too.
Oh.
And you can integrate with Hyper-V and Azure VMs. And I'm going to be adding AWS as well. And basically what that means is that I can give it a Hyper-V VM name, and it will make sure that PowerShell remoting is enabled. If not, it'll set all that stuff up. It'll hook me up. You know, it'll find a DNS name to that VM, hook me up, and install, you know, right from wherever I am. And integrate with checkpoints too. So if I want to basically, if I know that, oh, something didn't go right with my install and I want to back up to the state where I was when I started, it has a helper command that makes that very easy to do.
Cool. Okay.
So the next interesting thing to talk about is the package creation.
We understand what sort of the base state of a machine needs to be. It's just running with PowerShell available and IE.
Right. So the prerequisites is it'll work on any operating system from 2008 R2 and Windows 7 up and PowerShell 2 up.
Right.
If you're on just Server 2008 or, you know, or XP or Vista.
As long as you have PowerShell installed.
I'll admit I don't test on XP Vista, so there could, you know, I can't say that it's, you know, I just can't vouch that it's going to be
and XP officially expires in April of 2014.
Yes.
You need to stop. It's
exactly,
time to move
right.
on.
Right. That's right.
All
right. That's absolutely right. But yeah, all my, I have a kind of a mini lab that runs on my X1 Carbon, and all my tests are based off of, you know, clean OS installs for 2008 R2, Windows 7, Windows 8.1, and Server 2012.
Right. So as long as you have that install in place, you pop up an IE window, you should be good to go, which sort
exactly.
of speaks to, we need to build a package.
So let's step back a little bit and talk a little bit about Chocolaty, because if you know how to create a Chocolaty package, you'll have no problem creating a BoxArt package.
Right.
And so what is Chocolaty? Chocolaty is, you can think of Chocolaty, well, Chocolaty is, it leverages NuGet packages. So if you're familiar with NuGet packages, again, you're a step up on the learning curve. But basically, these packages are, you know, self-contained bits of code that basically tells the package management system, this is my package name, this is my version, I can depend on these other packages, and in the case of Chocolaty, a PowerShell file. So in this PowerShell file, you can put any PowerShell you want in there.
Right.
Now Chocolaty provides several commands that can make certain installation steps a lot simpler. So it has helper commands for, you know, unzipping files, for installing MSI files, for creating desktop shortcuts, for installing, you know, installing Windows features, all of that. But in the end, it's a PowerShell file, and you can think of Chocolaty as basically an engine that goes and you tell it to run a file, and it runs your file. It looks for all packages that are dependent on that.
Right.
If any package has already been installed, it skips it and just and moves on, which is part of the way of how we deal with the reboot problem, because basically you reboot and basically it just starts all over again.
Yep.
And it keeps track of what it's already done, and if it's already installed a package, then it just moves on to the next one.
How do you get past the login screen?
So the way that works now, this works a little bit different if you're hitting it from remotely or if you're doing this locally. So
right.
If you're doing this locally, when you go through this the first time and you provide your password, it does a couple things. One, it just sets the normal registry for auto login. But the password, what it does a special thing with that, because, you know, clearly, I mean, you can put, there is a place in the registry you can put that. You shouldn't do that, and I don't do that.
Right.
It's basically just plain text. So there's a special area, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but there's a special area, in Windows. And this is basically what Windows does when you're doing install the operating system, and it has to reboot itself. But that's where I put the password. And so that's all set up. That handles the auto login, and then there's the other step of handling it, basically, of invoking the script. So after the auto login happens, what I do is before the reboot happens at all, I create a file, and I basically put the script to the invocation script in that file, and I put that file in the user startup directory.
Right.
There's several ways that you can do this. I'm actually have a backlog item. I'm gonna be changing that. I'm gonna be going to more of a scheduled task based workflow, which is basically what I use when this happens remotely. I haven't had any problem with that.
Right.
And so basically, yeah, it reboots, it relogs you on. That file is right in your startup directory, and it kicks off BoxStarter and everything.
It just picks up where it left off.
Exactly. I mean, technically, it picks off from the beginning, but it knows what it's done.
Right.
It just skips what it's already done.
So it just goes past what it's already done and keeps on going.
Exactly. That's correct.
And, I mean, especially when you're just dealing with patches, like, you don't know how many reboots this could be. This script's got to be flexible to whatever hits it.
Yeah. I mean, on Windows 7, it's not uncommon, for example, for my laptop setup to reboot, maybe 10 times.
Right.
Because one thing, but BoxStarter is very, so what it does is it looks for pending reboots. And, it could be that a pending reboot is there, but you don't really need to reboot, but BoxStarter doesn't necessarily know that.
Yeah.
So it, it errors on the side of safety. And if you have a pending reboot, I have to give props to Brian Wilhite. He actually works at Microsoft now as a PFE. I basically am using his pending reboot detection script.
Nice.
It's awesome. I did a lot of research on it, and there's all sorts of different things you have to look at. And as the Windows operating systems evolve, there's additional places to look. But it's been pretty rock solid as far as making sure things stay clean in terms of that, that pending reboot state.
Oh, for sure. So we were talking about building the package.
Yeah. So like I said, it's a PowerShell script, and often a BoxStarter package can often look different than your typical Chocolaty package. In that a typical Chocolaty package is basically intended to install a single piece of software. So often a Chocolaty package will just be, a line or two that goes off and downloads an MSI and installs it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a BoxStarter package, you could kind of think of as a meta package, where it's not uncommon to see a BoxStarter package that basically is just a bunch of lines of cience this and cience that. Cience, by the way, is the Chocolaty install command. So when
right.
I say cienced, Fiddler, that basically says, that's the Chocolaty command to install Fiddler.
Go get Fiddler.
Go get Fiddler. So a common BoxStarter package will basically have, 5, 25 lines of that. though typically a box starter package might will include a few extra things. So like I say, box starter does, it has a few commands that that I find very helpful. For example, change the Windows Explorer settings so that I see the, you know, protected files, or I see file extensions.
Mm-hmm.
Change enable remote desktop. I already mentioned install critical updates, and we're adding more to these. So I'm gonna with Windows 8.1, I'm gonna be installing some to boot straight to desktop.
Right. Because it's as much about configuration as it is about installation.
Exactly. I mean, the bottom line is, I have a machine, and I like it to not only have certain applications, but I like it to look in a certain way. I like my taskbar skinny. I like my, like these things in my taskbar.
Right.
And I want to be able to, know that something horrible could happen to this box, and I can go to another box. It doesn't even have to be the same hardware, which is the beauty of this methodology. And I can basically have the exact same thing on that other box.
Absolutely, just have it come straight across. Exactly. What about configuration in other bits of software?
So there are certainly ways to manage that. So for example, I like to use Sublime Text as my primary text editor.
Right.
And so with Sublime Text, it's got a very rich plugin ecosystem, and what I'll do is I'll include inside of my package basically a copy of my personal Sublime folder.
Right.
And so in my package script, I'll basically just say copy this folder to where I know Sublime Text expects that folder to be. Likewise, I'm a big fan of console 2 for my command line console, and all of its settings are kept in a file called console.xml, so I just keep that in my package. So it's very application specific.
Right, you're going to have to figure that out for each app.
Exactly.
And it does sound like, it's not like I can just point at my existing machine and say, hey, make me a package that would make this machine look, make another machine look like this.
Right. Well, that's a very interesting concept. I don't think you could do something that would do exactly that, but I think you could get pretty close. That's something that I really would like to tackle.
Right. I mean, I could think if I was going to start building out a package for my main dev machine, I'd start by going to my installed programs list and just going down that list.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, and the tricky thing with that is that you'd need to figure out, okay, so for each of these installed programs, is there a package on Chocolaty?
Right.
Now, if you're already a Chocolaty user, it's pretty easy. You could basically just iterate through all your Chocolaty packages on your box and create Chocolaty packages for those.
Sure.
I think, so there's some interesting things that I've thought of doing is, one thing is run something in the background that basically inspects everything on the public Chocolaty.org feed.
Right.
Open up all those MSIs, look at their package IDs, and kind of build up a database of that you could basically hit, you could basically look at your installed apps and try and find matches for Chocolaty packages. That's a thought. There's also, you could look at all of your installed features and diff that against, maybe with the kind of the default image for that particular operating system is, and then create a bunch of script that'll basically install all those, like IIS and MSMQ or whatever.
And just to be clear for folks who don't know anything about Chocolaty, we're not just talking about open source software that's on Chocolaty. Visual Studio's there. You still have to provide your own license key.
Right.
But the installation is there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. I mean, the free versions of Visual Studio are there as well.
Yeah.
But you can, and here's the other thing that's important that people miss too, is it's important to separate Chocolaty, the engine and package management system of Chocolaty,
right,
from the Chocolaty feed. So a lot of people think of Chocolaty as being one and the same as Chocolaty.org. But there's nothing stopping anybody, just like with NuGet packages,
right,
from creating your own, internal feed. You can use a service like MyGet.org to host, to do the hosting for you of a private feed, or you could just drop it on a share within your own organization. So the fact that you're using, this package management doesn't mean that you have to be, installing software that's visible to the world.
Right. Well, and I think that's an interesting side of this whole thing. Because like you said, the box starter packages, if you know the URL, like it sounds like you could almost make the ideal developer configuration for a web developer and just say, here, anybody can run this.
Right,
you may have to have the license keys for all the software, but anybody can run the package.
Yep. Yeah, in fact, we haven't really been making much use of this at all, but there is a community mygit.org feed that's kind of intended for that. Because so when you create a box starter package, typically you're not going to want to put that package onto the public chocolatey.org feed, or perhaps you should not. Because the chocolatey.org feed is really intended for packages that should be and are intended to be consumed by anybody.
Right.
If I have my own stuff certainly if it's stuff, sensitive information, I wouldn't want to put it there.
Or just internal applications that aren't publicly available.
Yeah, I would not want to put it there. And so in those cases, you're going to want to use something like MyGit or a share. And here's something else that you can do that I think is important to note, because this makes the whole package creation very easy. Something I did not too long ago is I basically made it so that you can actually put your entire package script in a gist. Now, of course, this, if it's on gist.github.com, it is public. But you can then feed to either from the command line version of BoxStarter or from the URL we just mentioned, you can feed it basically that gist URL.
Right.
And it'll basically on the fly create a package based on the script inside that gist. A lot of people don't, there is some ceremony involved in creating the package. You need to, after you create the script, you need to pack it, you need to publish it somewhere. In the end, it is pretty simple. I've got tutorials on boxstarter.org and there's all sorts of information you can find on chocolatey.org. But it is just, especially to those that are just unfamiliar with PowerShell in general or even the command line in general.
Right.
That's typically not, there's a lot of kind of, fear and trepidation, that.
Yeah, it takes time to get used to this. And, the other argument here is you could go down the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit route. But that,
right,
to me, seems like a lot more formal of a route. And it also, you're building a template that has to be updated as opposed to this, which is each time you run it, it's going to go get the latest bits.
Right, yes. And of course, you can, if you want to make sure that you kind of pin to a particular version, you can do that.
Right.
But the default is exactly as you said.
The get the latest.
Get the latest.
Right.
Yep.
When it goes so far as say, when get the latest, say, go get Visual Studio, it's going to get 2013 versus 2010 or 2012?
With Visual Studio, typically you have separate packages for separate versions just because they're so distinct. Now, for example, for Visual Studio 2013, and I maintain a lot of the Visual Studio packages.
Yeah, I was just taking a look, and I recognized this name.
Yeah, so I think I might have been the first one to start putting them up there. About a year and a half ago, I actually, I work in this in DevDiv, and I basically landed in a particular position where basically I had to install the latest builds, keep that up on my machine, and just after a while, it just became a pain, and so forget it. I'm just going to come up with a way to.
There's got to be a better way to do this. Yeah.
Exactly. And with Visual Studio, it's not quite as simple. I mean, it's not incredibly difficult, but it's not as simple as just plugging in the MSI. There's a whole file that you have to tell it, which features you want. And there's not a whole lot of documentation for figuring that out. For example, for Visual Studio 2013, what I will do is I'll try and keep it up to date with the updates.
Yep.
So update one just came out, so pretty soon I'll be adding that in there. So when you get the latest Visual Studio 2013, it'll be 2013 plus update one.
Cool.
And if you don't want update one, with Chocolatey, you can always, like I say, you can always pin it. You can always say, get me this version. Whenever you add a new package for a particular package ID, it's the exact same thing as with NuGet packages. The old package never is deleted. It's always there.
Yeah. Well, and this sort of speaks to a broader idea. You know, we just talked about rebuilding desktops and laptop machines, but now I start to think of this in context of remote installation on VMs for manipulating a cluster.
Yeah.
You know, and again, there's Configuration Manager, Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, and so forth for this. This seems like it's just a different approach to the same sort of thing.
Yeah. It's definitely different. I mean, there's a growing ecosystem out there of tools that in some ways overlap certain areas of Boxstarter, in some ways totally supersede it. Boxstarter is really triggered at a couple of things. It's triggered at, the individual that wants to, repave their machine. And I also I want it to be as painless of experience. So a lot of these other tools assume that you know things, either about PowerShell or Ruby or just configuration management in general. And my goal with Boxstarter is to eventually get to the point you don't even have to know PowerShell or open up a command line to create this stuff.
You just type in type in a URL string and you're off.
Right. And what I'm getting at is even to create the packages. I'd like to come up with a way that I don't have, I don't even have to go to the command line to do that. I can basically just, build one up using some tooling that I'm thinking about working on. But
I just feel like this speaks to a larger mentality around DevOps, where this whole installation strategy with new software in your own internal NuGet server could be really an interesting way to continuously roll out builds.
Absolutely. There's tons of use cases you can think of. So there's the one that you mentioned, to actually do a, actually deploy your software. So not only to build it, but then you have your build server, remote into your production servers and install those builds. And then there's the whole, the dev test environment. As a dev, I know, I need to have a SQL Server box over here. I need to have, app tier box and a web tier box over here. And rather than building that up and breaking that down, all the time and trying to maintain, VHDs for all that, I just have to maintain these scripts to do it. And, but the idea is that it's just much, much simpler, because those VHDs can be it can be difficult to keep up. And I'm a firm believer that documentation should be the script itself.
Right.
When it comes to deployment, because I don't care, that document's never going to stay up to date. And the time that you most need to look at it is the time that you can't afford.
Yeah. When you actually need it to work right now, because you're in a hurry.
Right. Right. So if the documentation is the script itself, that never goes out of date. What it means is that you need to, write your script in a way that, other people can decipher it. And that's one of the things that I love about PowerShell is, I don't have to say, oh, here's the script. Oh, it's an exe. So now I got to figure out where the source code is and whereas in PowerShell, with script modules for PowerShell, that's pretty straightforward. It's right there.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's self-documenting because this is what it's going to do.
Yes.
Right. It's all the same thing. And so it's a living document. It's in constant use.
Right. Right. And so you can share it with, people in your organization, because this happens all the time, right? Like, you have a particular thing that you're bumping up against, or you have something that you want to show, or you want somebody else to kind of build off of. And you have to describe to them, okay, oh, that setting wasn't set. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you that.
Yeah.
And this kind of just takes care of that. And, I can't tell you how many times, I've as a developer, you work on something, you work with your ops team, and you try and convey, oh, yeah, make sure, this setting is such and such. It's so much easier to just give them a script.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it just speaks to, PowerShell to me is the glue of DevOps in the Microsoft world. So here is an extension on top of PowerShell that makes a lot of sense to take care of more of those things.
And what's nice with package management is it's very composable as well.
Right.
So when you don't have a framework like Boxstarter or some of these others, it's very easy to kind of come up with these big bulky scripts that nobody wants to touch. And everything has to happen in just the right order in order for everything to work right. And the point behind Chocolaty is that each packet should be, you know, completely, you know, idempotent and should be, you know, rerunnable. The virtue, part one of the virtues of any NuGet feed is that you can put it on the web, and you can, you know, kind of provide a nice user experience for looking to see what packages are available to me, providing descriptions to describe each of the packages, and users can just basically, you know, pick and choose. Oh yeah, I want that. I want that. I want that. And you can take, if you know that a particular package will not work without these other packages, as the package author, you can take care of that by setting up your package dependencies correctly.
For sure. Hey, Matt, a half hour has just flown by. So folks who want to get started with Box Starter, it's just boxstarter.org?
Boxstarter.org. From there, there's links to, you know, not only the download, but the discussion to open up issues.
And did I also see the projects on CodePlex now?
Yes. So it's on from the beginning. It's been on CodePlex.
Okay.
So the source code is totally available. And, you know, I've had a couple pull requests now, and I'm totally open to pull requests. So if there's a feature in there that you'd love to see, you know, by all means, feel free to submit a pull request. I usually tweet whenever I do a release. So MROCKX, MWROCKX is my Twitter handle.
Yep.
If you have any issues or any feedback, anybody, I'm dying to hear, you know, what your ideas are. So, please send me a line if you have any.
Matt Rock, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.